Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness, and I just want you to know that room 50 downstairs is also available, and I think there's food down there, Representative Gelson.
No, not yet, but there will be later if people want to visit with each other after the hearing.
So feel free, if you want to go down to room 50, you can do that and take your families there. Also, before we start our hearing, Representative Maurer, you have want to talk about why we are wearing red today.
Yes, I do. I want to just take a couple minutes here and talk about National Wear Red Day. Today, Friday, February 2nd, 2007, is National Wear Red Day. And excuse me if I'm looking down, but I want to make sure I get everything in. Americans across the country are wearing red to unite in the national observance to give women a personal and urgent wake-up call about their risk for heart disease. Today's effort is part of a larger movement known as the Heart Truth. The Heart Truth is a national awareness campaign for women about heart disease and is sponsored by many organizations committed to the health and well-being of women. In February 2003, the red dress was recognized as a national symbol for women and heart disease awareness. Women throughout the country are enthusiastically embracing the red dress, which is propelling a national awareness movement about women and heart disease. The goal of Heart Truth is to put a face on heart disease and motivate women ages 40 to 60 and health professionals to take heart health seriously and engage in action to reduce women's risk of heart disease. The campaign is a result of recommendations from more than 70 experts in women's health who helped develop a national plan for women's heart health. Many women think heart disease is a man's disease, and it isn't. Heart disease is the leading cause of death of American women, regardless of race or ethnicity. In fact, 1 in 3 women dies of heart disease. It can also lead to disability and significantly decrease one's quality of life. Progress is being made. Women are beginning to realize that heart disease is also a women's disease, and let us share the common goal of a greater awareness and better heart health for all women. And so when you see people wearing red today, and I kind of went a little bit overboard in my red pants. But it does raise a serious issue. And there is a chart that I believe is on the back table. And basically all it says is, you know, the bottom line is about 330,000 women will die this year because of heart disease, where 41,000 women will die because of breast cancer. And not to lessen breast cancer, but the point is that heart disease is the number one leading cause of death of women in this country. Thank you for your time now.
Thank you, Representative Maurer, and thanks for wearing the wonderful red pants today. It's an honor. Okay, I am going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2406 and House Bill 2407. And Andy, did you want to read a little bit, and then we'll have Representative Gelfish?
A brief.
All right.
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 2406 would direct the Department of Human Services to provide home nursing care, durable medical equipment, and respite care for children with physical or developmental disabilities. It would require DHS to reach a target enrollment of 125 children and authorize DHS to enroll an additional 25 children per year. House Bill 2407 would expand the eligibility criteria of the Oregon Health Plan to include children with disabilities whose family income is no more than 300% of the federal poverty level. It would create a buy-in program for children with disabilities whose family income exceeds 300% of the federal poverty level. It would also direct the Department of Human Services to adopt standards for premiums, copayments, or deductibles, and it would prohibit copayments or deductibles if the family income is below 250% of the poverty level.
We want to welcome you all here. It is just wonderful to see all of you here in this audience today early in our legislative session. So thank you for coming. Thank you for bringing your families. And also thanks to Representative Gelser, who has put in numerous hours and effort into these two bills. She has been a hero in these issues, and so we are so happy to have her in the legislature and especially to have her on this committee. So, Representative Gelsey.
Should I go down to
the Yes, you? Thank
right.
you.
Thank
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for having me this morning. For the record, my name is Sarah Gelser. I'm the state representative from House District 16. I represent the portion of Benton County that includes Corvallis and Philomath. I'm here today to give you an introduction to House Bill 2406, known as the Medically Involved Waiver, and House Bill 2407, known as the Oregon Family Opportunity Act. And I want to give you a brief overview of what these bills do, but it's my goal to keep my comments short. We have many families here that can speak to the importance of this bill much better than I can. I became interested in this type of legislation when I began working at the Department of Human Services and had the opportunity to learn a little bit about what it is that causes families to choose to place their children out of their homes. And at first I thought I was just hearing anecdotal stories. But then I started to go through systematically looking at trying to identify what are some of the triggers that trigger families to no longer be able to support their children in their family home. And I was overwhelmed by how simple some of those triggers might be. They seem simple, but for families that are caring for children with extraordinary needs, they can be overwhelming. And just a little bit of income, a middle-class income, can put necessary help and support and assistance just out of reach of so many families that want to keep their children at home with their moms and their dads and their brothers and their sisters and their dogs and cats and neighbors and all of those things. So these two bills would be the first step towards creating a safety net for these families. It would change our system to one that's proactive and family-driven and recognizes that families are the cornerstone of our communities and that our public policy is driven by policies that help to keep them together. House Bill 2406, the medically involved waiver, focuses on children that have very severe disabilities. Children that are medically involved typically will be kids that require assistance with almost all activities of daily living. They may need help through the day and the night. And while they may not need a trach or a ventilator in order to breathe, they may need a parent or a caregiver staying up with them all night to tilt their chins back to make sure that their airway is open. As they get older, they become very heavy. There's a lot of issues related to lifting and care, and like all children, these are very beautiful children that need some support, and so do their parents. What House Bill 2406 does is creates the opportunity for the Department of Human Services to provide Medicaid-waivered services to children based upon their medical need as opposed to their parents' income. This will bring into these families some in-home nursing care, some durable medical equipment that makes it possible for these families to have help with lifting, to have help with bathing, and to have the opportunity to sleep at nighttime. One of the things that really surprised me as I started talking to families and listening to families were the efforts that families needed to go to in order to try to care for kids. And one of the most heartbreaking stories that I heard was a family who was very struggling to keep their child at home but just didn't quite qualify for a waiver that we do have for medically fragile children. And her doctors made the recommendation that maybe they should give her a trach that she didn't really need because that was the thing that kept her away from eligibility for another waiver. She couldn't put her child at risk for doing that and made the decision, the very painful decision, to place her out of home. And I think that's another point that I want to make very clear. The decision to place a child out of home is extremely heart-wrenching and difficult and is made by parents that love their children deeply and passionately. And so we have children that are in nursing homes and children that are in foster care that are very much loved by their families, and we need to offer them our support. House Bill 2407 touches a broader group of children, everything from mental illness to kids that might not quite be eligible for the medically involved waiver. 2407 would make Oregon the first state in the nation to adopt the new Federal Family Opportunity Act, which was signed into law just this past spring. It recognizes that families of these kids often have extraordinary out-of-pocket costs related to their care that either isn't covered by private insurance or may be covered for other members of the family but is excluded in the policy due to a disability. These are things like access to diapers for a 12-year-old, the formula that might go through a feeding tube, expanded durable medical equipment, physical therapy, occupational speech therapy. Families will talk to you today about what those costs are. So what this bill does, it would allow families to pay a premium to buy into the state Medicaid plan as a supplement to their private insurance. They would keep their private insurance, but by paying that premium, they would have the ability to access all of those things that their kids need that are very basic needs that they have. Families are going to talk to you about these things. I ask you to keep in mind that the families that you're going to hear from, they are not saints and they're not heroes. They are ordinary parents who deeply love children that have extraordinary needs. And like you and I, because they don't have superpowers, it is humanly impossible to do this alone for the entire lifetime of a child. So I hope that we take this opportunity to help these very ordinary parents and their very beautiful children do what all of us want to do, which is to live together as a family in the most healthy way that we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gelser. Any quick questions of Representative Gelser? Great. Thank you so much.
And I did want to add one thing. In that, you'll notice in both of these bills that they are written very generally so that the department has the ability to write rules. And that is for two reasons. One, the federal regulations aren't yet out on the Family Opportunity Act. And in the waiver, we want to be sure that the department is able to write rules that comply with the terms of the federal waiver. And that is why there is some flexibility there in those rules. And that will also allow them to write rules that allow them to administer this program so that the focus is on the kids' needs rather than on administrative costs. And the department has been extraordinarily helpful in putting these together, and I'm very grateful for their partnership and help.
Great. Thank you again, Representative Gelser. All right, we've got the department. Who in the department?
Two representatives.
Okay, and you want to call up the two folks from the Department of Human Services?
Yes, Mary Lee Fay and Tina Kitchen. Do you want me to stay, or?
Why don't you come up here? I assume if you want to speak today that you have signed up here, and if you've come more than 100 miles, we're going to let you testify early on, and all you need to do is check that there's a one line that says, do you live more than 100 miles from this meeting location? And we want to make sure that you speak early and that you're going to be able to leave early if you need to. Again, room 50 is open downstairs, and eventually there will be food there if you want to take your families down there. Thank you so much. Yes, lady.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, good morning. I'm Mary Lee Fay. I'm with the Department of Human Services, Seniors, and People with Disabilities, and I'm the Administrator on Developmental Disability Services. I'm here today to give testimony on House Bill 2406. House Bill 2406 is the bill that directs the department to apply for a model waiver for Medicaid that would allow us to provide necessary supports to a family for a child who would otherwise be eligible for nursing home services. A model waiver is a very unique program from Medicaid for a couple reasons. One is it allows us to consider only the income of the child. If the child is not living with their family, if they've moved into a nursing home or a group home or a foster care, Medicaid considers the income of that child all by themselves, and they become eligible for all the services that Medicaid offers, including the health plan. If they're living at home with their family, because they're under 18, it's the entire family's income who is considered to be determined eligible for Medicaid services. So many of these children, while they're living with their families, if their family's income is above the Medicaid limit, don't get access to this. What the model waiver allows us to do is, even though the child is still living at home, it considers only the income of that child. Therefore, it allows us to provide the full Medicaid services that would be offered. That includes things like nursing home, in-home supports, as Representative Gelser mentioned, durable medical equipment, and access to health plan services, all things that are very important for a family trying to support a child. The other thing the model waiver does, however, is caps it. Because it's so unique, it basically says it cannot exceed more than 200 individuals on the waiver at any one time. So it's a small program. It's not intended to be big, and it can't grow without additional waivers. So it does indeed have us look at in the writing of the rules and the applying of for the waiver, looks at making sure we identify the criteria of who would be eligible and manage it at a at a very intensive level. So it would be the third waivers like this for Oregon. Oregon already has two waivers. One is for children who without this would be actually having their services met at a hospital level of care. Children with some very intensive needs. And the second is for children whose behavior support needs are so challenging that they would be outside of the family home in an institution care. This would be the third waiver. We would operate it similar to the others in that we would manage it centrally. It would be a program that's managed. The screening, the eligibility, the criteria is all done by a small group of staff that's operated out of Seniors and People with Disability Services and available for families statewide. The program, there are some individuals, some children today where we have been paying for family support using general fund dollars where we know these children and their family could qualify. So when you review the fiscal that has been prepared by the department, some of these funds would transfer, already creating a match to create the match with the federal government. So we've tried to identify as many resources that are already in place that could help with a program of this nature. It is not in the governor's budget. It is a program that would positively impact the lives of many families and children with disabilities.
Thank you, Ms. Fay. Any questions of Ms. Fay? Yes, Representative Maurer.
I'll wait until.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Tina Kitchen. I am the medical director for Seniors and People with Disabilities for the Department of Human Services. And I'm here to describe a little bit about House Bill 2407.
Ms. Kitchen, could I invite you to move away from you a little bit?
Away from, sorry. The Family Opportunity Act, which was recently passed by the federal Congress, gives states the option to create a new optional Medicaid category of eligibility, which essentially says that children who would meet a Social Security standard of disability, but whose families make more than the Social Security income standards, could be allowed to access Medicaid. House Bill 2407 would go ahead and implement that federal statute for Oregon. This is a group of children in our state of Oregon who have a lot of needs and do not have a lot of access to services in Oregon currently. And it will allow them to access both the Oregon Health Plan Plus benefit package that we have for all children across the state who meet those income criteria now, and for those that have some fairly significant needs around their activities of daily living, assistance with toileting, mobility, etc., it will allow them to access a small amount of in-home supports called personal care, which would be up to 20 hours per month. We think that it would be a very good access for children and Oregonians, children with significant disabilities, although it is not in the resources are not in the governor's budget. And as Representative Gelser has pointed out, that we're going to need flexibility to be able to implement this program depending upon the rules that will eventually be written by Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services in order to obtain federal match. We've been working very closely with her and do believe that the proposed amendments that we have seen will meet our technical concerns. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Any questions of Ms. Kitchen? Representative Maurer, you look
yes,
you have a question.
I do.
Please.
This is for Ms. Fay, and it's about the model waiver program. Is it a fait accompli that you request the waiver, you get it?
Chair Tomei, Representative Maurer, there's no guarantees from Medicaid that if we request, we will get it. We do believe, however, that because we have the history with two existing model waivers, that Oregon would qualify, and we would feel very positive that we would get this waiver.
So we could pass 2406, and there's still not a guarantee.
Chair Tomei, Representative Maurer, I believe 2406 indicates that it is dependent on us on receiving this. And the timeline in 2406 indicates that the program would begin in January of 08 or in when at the approval of Medicaid, if Medicaid is, it takes us longer than that. It is not unlikely to have a 6 to 8 month process from the time of submitting a request before Medicaid would approve a waiver like this.
Any further questions?
Representative Gilliam.
I'm interested in this waiver. Is this a strategy other states have employed? And the 200 number, I assume, is state by state, or is it a sliding scale depending on population or something like that?
Chair Tomei, Representative Gilliam, it is a program that other states have employed. It actually was started some years ago based on a family, it's called the Katie Beckett waiver, and it was passed by the Congress because there were a particular family who was really trying to get some access to services and not have to have the child leave the home. Rather than doing a statewide waiver that could be inclusive of large numbers of children, Medicaid began implementing the model waivers. The 200 cap is a federal cap, so no model waiver can go past that amount. And there are other states. There are at least 10 states that we know of who do this and do it successfully.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you.
So, Sabrina Pettin, we're going to ask these people to come up together. Sabrina, Kimberly Cleveland, and Robert Bach. Just remember not to put these to create some kind of a problem. Oh, by the way, I didn't mention earlier, if anybody has any cell phones or blueberries or blackberries or raspberries, if you could turn them off, not just on mute, but off, because it causes somehow the sound system to be buoy. So please turn them off. Thank you.
Good morning. I have a little bit of a cold. I apologize for my voice. I'm just going to read this because I don't think I could just talk right now. My name is Sabrina Peden, and I'm here in support of HB 2406. I'd like to tell you a little about my daughter, Alyssa K. Reeves, right back there. She's a third grader at Eugene Fields School in Silverton, Oregon. She's loved by her classmates and brightens every room that she enters. She always enters those rooms in her pretty blue wheelchair being pushed by an aide. There's usually a suction machine close by and a feeding pump on the back of her chair. Always, Alyssa has been medically fragile since the second she was born. She was diagnosed with cerebral palsy when she was 2.5 months old. She's completely dependent on another person for every need that she has. She's fed by a tube in her tummy and takes nothing by mouth for risk of aspiration. She cannot stand, walk, sit, or roll on her own. I bathe her, dress her, brush her hair and teeth, and she'll wear diapers for the rest of her life. Alyssa's had extensive surgeries in the past, everything from tubes in her ears to having her spine fused due to severe scoliosis and having hip surgery related to her cerebral palsy. She's been in and out of the hospital her entire life, usually due to chronic bladder infections and pneumonia. She's on 7 different medications daily for seizures, tone management, sleep issues, and digestive problems. These medications add up to an average of $750 a month, which is about $9,000 a year. I'm very grateful for the insurance coverage that Alyssa has. Alyssa requires many different pieces of equipment to assist her in her daily needs and allow her to be out of her hospital bed and with the rest of our family. We have a special chair on wheels that allows us to bring her to the dinner table with us or any other part of the house. Her wheelchair is much harder to maneuver down our hallways as we have not yet been able to modify her home. She has a stander that's crucial for the strength and growth of her long bones and digestive issues, and we have a special chair that I use to bathe her. Much of her equipment, again, is paid for by insurance, but it won't be too long before she outgrows them and they'll need to be replaced again. Because of Alyssa's extensive needs and medical state, I've depended highly on help with medical insurance through Alyssa's SSI Medicaid. and I understand that my income may not exceed a specified amount in order to keep that SSI and in turn her medical insurance. And because of this, I've chose putting off for 7 years marrying the man I love very much and whom I have a son with. Sorry.
It's okay. Take your time.
If I were to marry him, the income would be a factor in Alyssa's medical coverage. We would lose that coverage. Even though as a couple we would barely exceed that limit, we wouldn't be able to cover her needs and live. So for me, being married is not an option. Alyssa's made me realize what I truly want to do in life. I want to be a nurse, and I'm currently a nursing student at Chemeketa Community College and very excited to graduate and be able to give people the love and care that so many people have given my little princess. I'm also terrified at the fact that I will be working almost solely to cover medical expenses, 2 feet of pot supplies, medical equipment, medications, diapers, and babysitting costs, because no matter how old Alyssa gets, I'll never be able to leave her alone or with someone who is not highly qualified to care for her. I worked very hard the last few years to get to the point that I am, but it's questionable as to if I'll even be able to work in this profession. Even if I were to work full-time, I would barely be able to cover all of Alyssa's needs, let alone put away for my other 2 children's future. I know I have options. I could make her a ward of the state and put her in a special home, but she's my child, and right now, and as far into the future as I can see, these are not options I'm willing to accept. Alyssa's made an impact on everyone she meets. She's had many challenges, as it's been a challenge to care for her. But she's truly a blessing from above, and I thank God every day for her. I just want to say that I've never expected to be an option to these or an exception to these rules or expected to receive any special treatment. However, I do expect to be able to get married, make a decent wage, and still be able to live and provide my Alyssa and other children with a good future. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Do I need to move this at all?
Yes. Okay. Just not too close.
Just want to say thank you so much for doing that. Madam Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Kimberly Cleveland, and I live in Corvallis. I am so happy to be here today to talk to you and in support of House Bill number 2406. My daughter Maggie unfortunately could not be here today, but I brought a little picture of her. And as you can see from her smile, she's a very happy, jolly little girl. And she puts smiles on other people's faces as well. Anyway, thank you. Thank you. She also has incredibly high medical costs. On a daily basis, she uses devices for feeding, mobility, airway restriction, and communication. When Maggie was born, I had just finished my Bachelor of Science degree, and my husband was in graduate school. And neither of us were accomplished in our field, so she qualified for Medicaid. Because of Maggie's ongoing medical needs, we have restricted our income over the years to make sure that those needs are always met by continuing to qualify for Medicaid. Maggie has the same needs as everyone else, and they're just much more expensive to meet. Say, for example, teeth cleaning. For myself, I wouldn't mind at all if they put me under in order to get my teeth cleaned. But for my daughter, that's actually a medical need in order for her to safely have that procedure. Feeding is another good example. It costs me $160 a month to feed myself and $1,360 a month to feed Maggie because she uses a feeding tube.
Excuse me just a moment. I know that you're leaving with your daughter, and I just want to make sure that we acknowledge that your daughter is here and that we see who she is. I understand that. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for bringing your daughter. Sorry to interrupt your testimony.
No problem. And actually, I'm glad she went first because there's so much that she said that I wasn't able to put into mine. And so, you know, my daughter also has very similar needs. And so, anyhow, as I was saying, the cost of feeding my daughter is about $1,360 a month to feed her because she uses a feeding tube. Medicaid and the community, friends, family, and just being in a family that really loves her has helped us to carve out a really nice life for Maggie. And for this, we're incredibly grateful. However, we have 2 problems. Both of them have to do with the income limits and the cap on personal savings. The first is that Medicaid just can't cover everything. We need a van, and we actually need a really expensive van that we can transport Maggie and her power chair in. And Medicaid can't cover that, and because of the limits, they actually prevent us from saving enough and making enough to purchase it for ourselves. The second problem is my husband and I are both heading into our 40s, and we cannot adequately and responsibly provide for our future. A Medicaid waiver would make it possible for me to increase my hours as a research assistant immediately and also to consider some of the employment opportunities that have come my way over the years. It's not too late for us to save for our future, and it's not too late for me to establish in a field of interest, but it is getting a little late. I believe it's in all of our best interest to allow us to plan for our own family's future while continuing to give Maggie the home that she deserves. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You know, I'm going to allow questions, just brief ones, if anyone has any questions of the speakers. Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah. Chairman Tomei, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Robert Bach, and I live in Hillsboro, Oregon. I'm here today to speak in support of 2406. I'm convinced that passage and implementation of this bill will enable children with significant medical needs to thrive at home and contribute to the success of their families. My own family story is really my best illustration. Almost 3 years ago, our daughter, Hannah, was born with a number of medical conditions. She could not swallow or maintain appropriate oxygen levels. She used a gastrinomic feeding tube, which you've also heard about on this panel, to eat. She was also born with a cognitive disability diagnosis. For the first 3 months, Jeanette, who's my wife, and I served as nurses and parents, working hard to help Hannah survive without any local family, community, or in-home nursing supports. In the next 3 months, Hannah's condition worsened, and she ended up at the hospital for an extended stay. At 6 months, using a ventilator for breathing support, Hannah came home, enrolled in Oregon's Medically Fragile Children's Unit, MFCU, also a Medicaid waiver program, and our family's life really changed forever. Suddenly, we had nursing, equipment, and prescription copay support. We weren't alone. Medical professionals helped train us, and we them. Hannah's health improved. We worked to involve Hannah in family activities like sitting at the table during dinner, having family reading time at bedtime, and even going out shopping. Hannah contributed, teaching us her signs for song and pickup, or demanding those two things, making decisions about when she was ready to take a break from the ventilator, and playing with her brother Gabriel. Hannah's participation in MFCU also allowed us to keep our family literally intact. Emotionally, Gabriel learned what it was like to have a little sister, Hannah, to idolize her big brother. We all deepened our empathy and commitment to each other in good times and bad. We all leaned on Hannah's supports to prevent caretaker burnout, which I think is actually fairly common in our community. Financially, Hannah's supports helped me continue working for my current company rather than find a job that might help us qualify for Medicaid or one that would allow me to alternate nursing shifts daily with Jeanette. In keeping my job, I also kept my private health insurance, which, outside of nursing, still pays the vast majority of all of Hannah's medical bills, greatly reducing the cost to the state of Hannah's care, which is quite expensive. Physically, because of MFCU supports, we have lived together and celebrated Gabriel's private birthday, Hannah's first spoken word, which was hug. 2 months ago, we even piled into the family van, drove down to Southern California, and ended up at Disneyland and Legoland, which was our first long-distance full family vacation. So as I said earlier, because of MFCU supports, we have lived together and had all these great experiences, and they're really the best illustration that I can offer of the impact that having the right supports can have on both children with significant medical needs and on their families. I have experienced family life with and without supports in that first 3 months compared to almost 3 years since. And based on that experience and our successes, I urge you to support HB 2406. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is Hannah here today?
She is not. Hannah actually is doing quite well, but Mom was a little under the weather. So she was our nurse for today, at least Mom was.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions of either of our speakers? Thank you so much. Yes, Representative Gelfand.
I just wanted to thank you for coming and speaking. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. So we have Judy Zipka? Welcome, Judy.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I am Judy Zipka. I am from Bend, and I'm here to speak in support of both pieces of legislation. I have a 15-year-old daughter named Andrea who is currently a resident at Providence Child Center. So I'm here today to speak on both sides of this issue. For the first 13 and a half years, we cared for her in Bend at her home. And we are representative of the stories that you're hearing today of a family whose income was too high to qualify for SSI and Medicaid. And we were quite proud of the fact that her income was too high. We did not want it to be lower. Consequently, the doors to services for Andrea shut continuously on us. There are very few programs available for families who have an income above that level. So for almost 14 years, we cared for Andrea at home, and our primary sources of support were two programs that I do want to put in a good word for. Early intervention was a fabulous program. I urge your continued support of that. It has no income guidelines. Really saved our lives. And the other one was the Family Support Program of Deschutes County, which truly was our only lifeline as Andrea moved out of the early intervention stage, became an elementary school student. It was the sole source of funding we had, and they were quite generous to us. They did as much as they could. In the last 3 years that she was home, they were able to give us $400 a month, which we used to hire someone to come in the morning and help me bathe her and dress her and feed her, because by that age she was much too much for me to handle. This was not respite. This was just another pair of hands in the house to get this done. There was no respite. There was no assistance. Everything else was done. We did have private insurance. We continued in this manner, and like all these other families, we love our daughter. She's fabulous. She's a real spiritual asset to us. But my back was worn out, inflammation, constant problem, secondary diseases, my husband's joints were going bad, the marriage was falling apart. The stress of doing this day after day after day was literally killing our family. We needed help. And there was nothing out there. And Family Support and our case manager spoke with us about our options, and there really was only one option, and that was to put Andrea in Providence. And Providence is 3 hours away from my home. What am I going to do, though? I couldn't continue as I was doing, and I didn't think either option was good. But we did. We placed Andrea in Providence, and it's been almost a year and a half now. And to tell you the truth, I'm still in the adjustment phase. I still feel like I'm very traumatized. I now spend half my time in Bend and half my time in Portland. I rented a room in a house close to Providence so I could be there, spend 1 week with Andrea, come back. I've got an 18-year-old who's trying to graduate from high school. Troubled, I might say, not surprisingly. The kid's not as well adjusted as you might expect him to be. He's sad because there's no college fund for him. There was no savings for that sort of thing. So now here's the funny thing, though. All those years I was taking care of Andrea, $400 a month was the maximum I could get. We put her in Providence, $10,000 a month, you know. Just the disparity between those two numbers is so incredible. If it takes Providence $10,000 a month to take care of Andrea, why would anybody think that it would only take me $400 a month? Why would anybody think that I could continue to do that job that professionals require so much more for? It's the most inefficient waste of our state's resources that I've ever seen. If I'd have had $1,000 a month diverted to my family, think what I could have done. That would have been almost three times what I was getting. I could have had caregivers. I could have had equipment. That would have been one-tenth of what we're spending on her. If I'd have had $2,000 a month, my gosh, what could we have accomplished? That would have been one-fifth of what we're spending on her today. Now, ultimately, Andrea was headed for Providence. There are some children in this world whose disabilities are so severe that no matter how much the family loves them, they cannot be cared for at home. And I want you all to remember that there's no shame in having a child at Providence. It's a wonderful place, and those children are quite lucky to have it where they do. It's sad that we had to make that kind of choice. It's sad that I've had to split up my life between two places, but I knew from the beginning my life wasn't going to be normal. I understand that, but I'm not going to live like other people do. But this legislation, you know, it's not going to help me. That window's closed for us, but there are families like me. And the thought that Oregon takes care of so many different kinds of people and would utterly turn their back on middle-income families who are doing this, you know, the number of times that people have come up to me and said, I don't know how you do what you do. I couldn't do it. And I thought, and yet you're willing to toss me out there and make me do it alone, because that's really what we're doing. There are some people who will benefit from this program who are currently on Medicaid, but there are some families, think about it, that there are no supports, none at all. That's crazy. And that's really what I'm speaking to, are those families who are paying taxes, who are working, who are busting themselves to care for these most fragile children, and the state of Oregon has said, really, we don't have any help for you? That's immoral. That's wrong. And that's who I want to speak for. I'm only able to be here today because she's in Providence. If Andrea were still at home, there'd be no way I'd be here today. I couldn't get away to drive to Salem. I certainly couldn't bring her here today. She's way too fragile for that. So I really hope that I speak for those families who are stuck home today, who don't have the luxury of coming to a committee hearing, that this would be a luxury for them, whose child is too delicate to bring out into a gathering of this size, who would seize if they were here today. Those families can't speak, and I can only speak because she's at Providence. And that's all I have.
Oh, thank you so much. Any questions?
Good.
Madam
Thank
Chair.
You. Yes, sir.
Judy, just a comment. I greatly appreciate you sharing that just now and the efforts and everything. I always find it interesting because you mentioned the term normal. You know, and what is that? Patsy Claremont once said that normal is but a setting on a dryer. I hear you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I brought a written testimony, which kind of tells a different story. I hope you'll look at it, because it's
absolutely
other points that I didn't touch on.
Absolutely, you will. Thank you so much. So now, Joey Raza and Abra Marsh. They left. Pardon? Joey Raza? Joey here.
My husband said I have to spell it for the rest of my life. Good Italian name.
Absolutely.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hold on here. This is called multitasking.
Absolutely.
Although you can't see them right now, my daughter Jade has an infectious.
I'm going to invite you to tell us who you are first.
I was going to do it at the end. My name is Joey Rosano. This is my daughter Jade. I'm a happy mom of three, living in Multnomah County in Portland, Oregon. Although you can't see them right now, my daughter Jade has an infectious laugh, a dazzling smile, and sparkling blue eyes. She also has Rett syndrome, a devastating neurological disorder, which prevents her from speaking, feeding herself, sitting up on her own, using her hands, or walking. The majority of girls will develop seizures and scoliosis. One out of four will need a G-tube for nutrition. Rett also brings breathing and sleep difficulties and the possibility of a SIDS-like death at any time. Every night I put Jade to bed, I pray that she will sleep a few hours so that I can get some much-needed rest. Every morning I pray that she'll wake up. My daughter depends on me for every minute of her life. It sounds like a tragedy, doesn't it? 3 years ago, I went from being a well-paid analyst in the private sector to a stay-at-home mom overnight. Today, our family lives on my husband's salary of $51,000, and yet we still live paycheck to paycheck. Last year alone, we bought a wheelchair for $12,000. We had to modify our home for $20,000, and we had to buy a used wheelchair van for $32,000. Add to that $1,000 braces for her feet, augmentative communication devices for $1,600 so she can tell us when she's hungry and in pain. On top of that, there are medications, insurance copays for speech therapy, occupational therapy, and physical therapy, diapers and wipes. That's over $70,000 of expenses on a $51,000 salary for a family of five. We do have private insurance, but we do not receive aid of any consequence from any government agency because we don't qualify for SSI. Our caseworker did tell us that we could give our daughter up for adoption so she could receive benefits from the state. Well, that's not an option for us, and it shouldn't have to be. I know my daughter will live with me for the rest of her life, God willing, and that's okay with me. I know she'll get even bigger and harder to lift than she already is. I know she'll probably develop seizures and scoliosis, and that she may live for a long, long time. Our family may never be able to do things normal families do if it's not wheelchair accessible or can't accommodate her special needs. And that's okay, too. Does this sound like a tragedy? It's not. It's really a love story. We love our daughter, and we're willing to go to extraordinary lengths to provide her a loving, enriching, and safe environment where she can thrive. I may not know a lot about how the government works, but I do know that I love a girl whose needs are going to drastically increase. And I'm ready for the burden and self-sacrifice that will require. I also know that I could use some help. I'm not looking for a handout, but I only have so much retirement that I can liquidate, and love doesn't pay the bills. At the very least, I need some respite and some diapers. Surely that's got to be less expensive than foster care or a long-term facility. Keeping Jade in our home means more than words can express. We have a saying in our home that you can probably understand. When Jade is happy, the whole house is happy. We can't put a dollar figure on that. Please support House Bill 2406 and 2407. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for bringing Jade. Any questions? All right. Thank you so much.
Carl Shank and James Ledbetter is here. And another... David
Willis.
Welcome, gentlemen. If you would just announce your names at the beginning, that would be very helpful.
I think Carl was first.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Carl Shank. Thank you for the opportunity to tell you our story and provide some details on why it's important to pass House Bills 2406 and 2407. My name is Carl Shank, and my family and I live in Corvallis. My wife, Terry, and I have three children, ages 16, 12, and 7. I'd like to give you some insight on what is required to care for a medically challenged child at home and what the financial costs are to the family. Our 12-year-old daughter is Katie, and she has high medical needs. She was born with a brain disorder called semilobar holoprosencephaly. She is nonverbal, unable to talk, walk, care for herself, and requires constant support. She weighs about 75 pounds, and we carry and lift her to and from bed, to the bath, and to her wheelchair, and when her diaper needs changed. We carry her to our van and place her in her car seat. She is fed through a feeding tube, since she cannot eat enough by mouth to thrive. During the day, she is fed about every 4 hours. She has high muscle tone from cerebral palsy. She has poor sleeping habits and has stomach reflux. Katie takes 5 prescription medicines throughout the day to help with asthma, constipation, reflux, and spasticity. Lately, she has begun to have seizures, and we are having additional medical tests performed to determine if the seizures might continue. Katie's main caregiver is my wife, Terry, who is a stay-at-home mom. Terry feeds, bathes, changes diapers, trims fingernails and toenails, cuts hair, and transports Katie, in addition to caring for our other children. She keeps the house and the family organized, fed, and in clean clothes. In addition to this work, she is a Girl Scout leader for Katie's group, volunteers in our son's classroom, and volunteers at church. We have limited respite care available because of the lack of qualified caregivers. Katie attends a local middle school and is in 6th grade in the life skills classroom. In addition to school, Katie is active in Girl Scouts, selling nuts and cookies and attending summer camp, rides horses and therapeutic horseback riding programs, swims, attends church and religious education classes, and has weekly physical therapy. Katie is quite an active girl and goes where we go. I'd like to give you an idea on what extraordinary medical expenses we have each year. The amounts that we pay, amounts below, are before any medical insurance benefit, except for the prescriptions. She's fed a liquid nutritional supplement that costs about $3,000 a year. Her diapers cost about $1,400 per year. The 5 prescriptions cost about $700 a year, and her weekly therapy sessions can cost upwards of $2,500 a year. As you can tell, she requires special durable medical equipment, including a $10,000 custom manual wheelchair, a special car seat for $600, a therapeutic stander for $2,500, and a feeding chair for $3,500. These equipment costs are also before any medical benefit. We're now looking at purchasing a minivan that has been converted for wheelchair accessibility because Katie is getting too heavy to lift and carry to the van, because we currently lift her 75-pound wheelchair into the van, and because of my wife's recent stroke. The cost to convert a minivan can range from $20,000 to $30,000 above the cost of the van itself. The medical expenses for Katie are for a healthy, special needs child with her specific needs. We have been fortunate where Katie has not had ongoing medical problems or required numerous hospital stays like many children with Katie's disorder. Other families can easily spend more for their special children requiring care and equipment. We are lucky to have an employer medical insurance that covers a major part of the medical expenses. Even with in-network insurance coverage at 80%, we can spend in excess of $4,000 per year for Katie's medical needs. I can't imagine the struggle those families who have no insurance or less coverage than we do and how they choose between medical costs and their other bills. Our life revolves around Katie's needs and schedules. This is not a choice, but our responsibility as her parents. How we live that life, though, is our choice. We will care for her as long as we are able to do so safely. We include her in all our family activities because she is a social girl and enjoys meeting people and seeing friends. She needs to be with her family, and her family needs her. These bills will help families cope with the struggles of raising a child with special needs. Thank you again for your time and consideration, and I encourage your support on these important bills.
Thank you so much. Is Katie here today?
No, Katie had some medical tests yesterday for her seizure tests and wasn't able to attend.
We'll tell her hello for us.
Thank you.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your testimony, Carl. You mentioned in your testimony that Terry recently had a stroke, and you also mentioned that she was the primary caregiver for Terry. Did that change in medical condition provide any make you eligible for any additional supports in your home?
Through the Benton County Developmental Disability folks, they provide us additional respite care for that time. I was able to take off of work to care for Katie and get those kids off to the school. And then during the time I was at work, we had a caregiver come in to feed Katie and help lift and carry Katie for changing her diapers.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. And so I think next is James.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Jim Ledbetter. On behalf of OHSU and the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center, as well as the Oregon Pediatric Society, I'd like to speak in support of House Bill 2406 and in support of House Bill 2407. As a developmental pediatrician with over 10 years practicing experience and as the director of the Oregon Center for Children and Youth with Special Healthcare Needs, I give my strongest support to the efforts promoted within these bills to facilitate access to family-centered and community-based services for some of Oregon's most medically involved children. House Bill 2406 takes important steps to address the conundrum faced by many families, as we've heard here today, whose children have intensive special health care needs and do not have the insurance coverage necessary to meet the health care needs of their child. Ultimately, many of these families are faced with a terrible dilemma whereby, in order to assure that their child will receive those necessary health care services, the family must relinquish parental care of the child to the state of Oregon. At the same time, the state of Oregon assumes a high cost of care in an institutional or foster setting, and the child is deprived of being raised in their family home environment. This bill will allow families of a subset of children with significant special health needs the option of home and community-based services, keeping the family together while providing the necessary supports to sustain the health of the child. This bill shifts the cost of care for this group of very medically involved children from a nursing home budget to a more appropriately public medical assistance plan budget. And in this way, state dollars are matched by federal dollars, allowing more efficient and effective utilization of the health care dollars. At the same time, this bill would allow children to remain in their homes and communities rather than be placed in institutional or foster care. Allowing families the option of keeping their children at home while providing the services needed sends a message that children are indeed valued members of our community, as well as our greatest asset towards the future of our state. Our specific procedures for implementation of House Bill 2406 are developed. We strongly encourage that the role of the child's physician and other health care providers be included in the plan. In addition, we support House Bill 2407 because this bill would allow families of some children who have significant medical needs but are currently not eligible for Medicaid coverage because of the family income to buy into Medicaid benefit plans. Families of children with special health care needs often face extraordinary out-of-pocket expenses, as we've heard testimony today. to meet their child's needs. Even with private health insurance, many children with special health needs do not have the coverage for necessary therapies, procedures, or medical supplies. Information from the National Survey on Children with Special Health Care Needs completed in 2001 tells us that 85% of children with special health care in Oregon were insured for the entire year previous to the survey. However, at the same time, the survey revealed that 37% of families who had a child with special health care needs covered by private health insurance felt that their health insurance coverage was not adequate to reasonably cover the cost of their needs. It should be noted that families who had both private and public insurance were less likely to report that their coverage was inadequate. For some families with employee-sponsored health coverage, benefits from providers can change yearly as benefit packages are negotiated. This instability in benefits threatens continuity of care for children who need special health care services the most. By being allowed to buy in and supplement their current insurance plans, families will be able to have their child's health care needs more adequately met. We appreciate the attention that's being focused in Oregon this year on providing health insurance for children who are uninsured. However, it is critically important to also address the needs of children who are underinsured. This bill is urgently needed to address the care of children with special health care needs who do not have adequate coverage. Thank you so much for this opportunity to testify on behalf of House Bill 2406 and 2407.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ledbetter. Any questions? Thank you.
Hello, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm David Willis. I'm a behavioral and developmental pediatrician, also vice president of the Oregon Pediatric Society, and I'm honored to be here. And I'm in place of Dr. James Lace, who you have a testimony from both the OMA as well as from our legislative committee of the Oregon Pediatric Society. I had prepared some remarks, but in view of both all the articulate nature of the families that are present, the number of people that want to give you true stories, I'm going to make my remarks a bit shorter, but mostly to commit to you that these two bills are really critical for what pediatricians experience with families that you're hearing about every day. 400 or so pediatricians across the state struggle with the struggles with families coming to them, 25% of which actually have medical and chronic conditions, and there are pediatricians across the state that work every day with families of this nature, with as we're seeing presently, struggling with trying to figure out how to create optimum interventions, supports to prevent depression, to prevent loss of work, to prevent the challenges that happen to their other children that live with them every day with these kind of difficulties. My own practice of 25 years has been about working for the support in families that have chronic medical issues and chronic developmental issues. The biggest challenge is not their commitment, not their interest for the best of their children, not the issues of the medical systems, the community services, and the intervention opportunities to really make differences. It's an issue of failures of support structures, of finances, and opportunities that could be afforded that would make tremendous differences. As medical science has moved along to provide amazing opportunities for families and has provided quality of life and dignity of services for children with special needs, we need partnership with the state and the financial services to help assure those kind of services. We have a whole cadre of medical systems, developmental systems, community supports. What often creates barriers is failure of financial services to allow us to move forward. Specifically, House Bill 2406, which provides for a medically involved home care program, from my standpoint, is a critical piece to help families that are so committed to their children that optimum care would be in their homes. It's a way, actually, to assure that their dignity, their psychological strength, and their value with their children is assured. When families have to place children in medical foster homes or in residential programs, the pain and the guilt of that struggle is very hard to overcome with. It impacts them for a lifetime as well as their siblings, and House Bill 2406 would address that issue. More importantly, the opportunity that's coming forth about a financial model, as noted by House Bill 2407, and also more specifically be a first state that really takes advantage of the opportunity, the Family Opportunity Act, and with the pediatrician's commitment to this effort along with partnership with the state through this kind of bill would be a tremendous asset for all these dear families that are here telling you their particular stories. Thank you for the opportunity of being able to hear this testimony, and we strongly, the OPS and all of his pediatricians, strongly support House Bill 2004-2006.
Thank you so much, Doctor. And if you do have written testimony, if you'd like to provide it to the staff over here, we'll make sure that it's disseminated to the committee.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Any questions of anyone in the panel? Thank you, gentlemen. I noticed that Representative Geltzer's family is in the back, and I also noticed that they are not scheduled to testify. But I would be so happy if they would stand up and wave so that we can recognize the support group behind Representative Geltzer. That's great. Thank you for coming. Next, I'm going to call up the next three people who have signed up, Shauna Harvey, and Tammy Walters, and Becky Adelman. Who would like to start? Go ahead.
I want to thank you all for your time. I really appreciate your presence here and your attention to this important matter. Again, my name is Shauna Harvey. I'm an academic advisor in the College of Science at Oregon State University. My child, Hannah Block, is 12 years old. She has pervasive developmental delays in speech, growth, fine motor skills, is visually and cognitively impaired. She also has a seizure disorder. Currently, I am covered with Blue Cross insurance at Oregon State University. Unfortunately, the medical bills end up costing much more than I'm able to cover monthly. They're peaking at about $1,000 a month. We also have need for diapers because during her seizures, she loses a lot of control. And if you've ever checked the prices at the store, you can imagine how much that adds up. I am deeply committed to raising my child at home. Because of this situation, I am now a single parent, and this has really fallen on my shoulders. One of the interesting situations I face since I have a master's degree is that I could be earning a lot more than I do, but if I do so, I lose my SSI coverage. Last month, I was notified by OSU that I had earned a merit increase of 5%. If I accept this merit increase and become full-time, I will end up being ineligible for SSI. I have a 15-year-old son, and I find that this situation is a vicious circle, and I don't know how to break it. Sarah and I go all the way back 15 years ago when we were all taking a special needs, living and learning with your special needs child class, and at that point I didn't know what this road was going to be like. But I want to tell you that I really appreciate your consideration of passing this bill because it would allow me to keep my child at home, raise her in a way that I can do best, and serve the state by keeping her out of expensive medical care. I'm tired of keeping my income low voluntarily. I'd like to be able to go forward. I'd like to be able to give my son the kinds of things that he'd like to have and not just be in a sinkhole financially. So please create a waiver to help families with children that have high medical needs. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for bringing your daughter this morning. And if people get tired of sitting, and some of the children do, I think they're remarkable that they haven't revolted. Because we know how long we sit up here on the dais. Any questions? Wonderful lady. Okay, thank you.
Good morning. My name is Tammy Walters, and I want to thank you for your time. I am a pediatric occupational therapist and the executive director of Mighty Oaks Children's Therapy Center in Albany. And for the last 10 years, I have worked with these wonderful families, serving hundreds of families from six of Oregon's counties at Mighty Oaks. Mighty Oaks is a nonprofit center, and it's a safe place for these families to come and receive the therapy services that their children need. It is also a place where they can come and not be concerned about if they can't afford their copay every week. However, those families are in such high need at this point in time that Mighty Oaks has now absorbed over $320,000 in scholarships given out to those families each year. Their need is so high that the burden is now falling on my shoulders of, can I keep Mighty Oaks open long enough to continue to meet their needs? And we hear their stories, and it's not just about the therapy services their kids need. We hear and we want to be able to provide and help each family get the things that they need for their child, and I don't have a way to do that. So I'm so happy to hear that these bills are out there. These families have touched my life in a way that I'm so grateful for 10 years at Mighty Oaks. But what was amazing to me is that this morning when my 5-year-old daughter heard what I was coming to do today and who I was representing, the families that can't be here, she said, well, I want to go too, because that's not right, and we need to do something about it. So a political activist is born.
Wonderful.
But I want to share on their behalf the families that couldn't be here today, that we've met through the years, and that are still coming to Mighty Oaks. And we hear stories every single day that, can you help me get formula? Because my child is fed by a tube and we can't afford it anymore. They're the middle-of-the-line families. They're making just enough, but not enough to truly survive. And they're the little tiny things, the diapers, like so many people have mentioned, it's the little things that their child needs, and they're just not covered. And it's great to have private health insurance. That's wonderful. It is sad, though, that as we speak, a little boy that I know is developing scoliosis in his spine because his parents can't afford a 30% copay to get a wheelchair to replace the one that he's outgrown, and that's how much their insurance will charge them, is 30%. They don't qualify for Social Security and Medicaid at this point. But the stories that break my heart are the families that we meet and the children that we come to love and adore, and their families cherish them, but they are considering or have already made the choice to place their children in foster care, and like Representative Gelser said, away from everything that they know and love, away from their familiar bedroom, away from their siblings, away from their parents being forced to travel to visit their own child. They want their kids at home, and we know that's where they belong. And there are supports there that we can try to help them, but families need respite. They need help with their equipment, and they need help with the financial burden that they're trying so hard to shoulder on their own. So we thank you so much for your time, for the hundreds of families that I've met through the years, that this could have helped or this will help in the future. So thank you so very much.
And thank you for coming, and thank you for being your wonderful daughter.
My pleasure.
I've just been notified that some of our committee will have to leave at 10. So we want to make sure that we have time to vote on this. So I'm just going to, I think we've got 3 more witnesses. Is that correct, Representative Gelson? Besides you, we certainly want to hear from you. We're going to ask folks to sort of minimize their testimony a little bit so we've got time enough to vote.
Okay. I'm happy to do that. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Becky Adelman, and I live in Portland, Oregon. I'm here to testify on behalf of both bills, House Bill 2406 and 2407. And I'd like to do that both from my personal perspective as a mom and also on behalf of many families that I work with through an organization called Family Voices. I'm the coordinator here in Oregon for that group. It is a group that was started by Julie Beckett, the mom from Idaho whose daughter has a waiver named after her that supports families in their homes. I don't think I can say much more than what has already been said by the fabulous families that are in this room, but I think it's important to repeat some of those things because these are families who not only love their children but want to take care of them in their homes. These are the families who are struggling and strained right now, not only because of the financial stresses on their family, but the emotional stress of wanting to do more than they can do and not having the supports to do that. My own child was born about 20 years ago now, almost 21. She's not able to be here today. I actually gave her a choice. She could go to the doctor and be poked and prodded, or she could come and testify before this committee. Go figure. Whoa. She has a very rare condition, which we knew nothing about until she was a year old.
when we finally got the diagnosis and found out that there was at that time an experimental treatment, we were covered by the insurance that was provided through my employment. My husband and I are both professionals. We worked full-time. We have another child. What has happened over the years in order to continue that insurance but also provide the care my daughter needed, I went from full-time to 80% to 75% to 50%, and with each of those changes, I accepted less responsibility and a lower rate of pay in order to do that. Her expenses, she is mobile. She is fully included in her school, or was. She's now graduated from high school. But to keep her alive, to keep her healthy, to keep her in the community and in her family, the cost of the medications, the therapies, the equipment are extensive. At various times, the cost of those things before insurance ran anywhere from $2,000 a month, and we're currently at about $2,500 a month, to over $6,000 a month. Mm-hmm. We're fortunate that we had the insurance to pay most of those costs, but our own personal monthly costs exceed $500 a month. We have been able to make the changes within our family to be able to do that. However, it severely impacts our ability to plan for the future. And right now, we're kind of living in terror of what's going to happen when she turns 23 and we can no longer cover her under our plan. I don't think we're very different than a lot of families. Certainly the diagnosis is different. Maybe some of the ramifications of that diagnosis is different. But we're not. We face a lot of the same challenges. And I really believe that with a little bit of support from the state, that we can really make a difference for the families, our communities, and our state. I hear from families almost every day through my work with Oregon Family Voices who are struggling to find services, to pay for services, to keep their families together. This would make a huge difference for all of our families. So I really urge you to consider this bill.
Thank you.
I agree. And I really want to thank Representative Geltzer for her insight and awareness about our children and our families and for making this a strong possibility in our state.
Thank you so much. We're going to call up quickly our next people are going to be testifying, Jim Russell, Chris Anderson, and Hugh Sato. Is that correct? And we're going to ask you, I'm sorry to do this, but we're going to ask you to sort of be succinct.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Russell. That would be no problem to me. That was my previous plan. I'm certainly humbled by the group today and your willingness to hear them. I'm the director for the Mid-Valley Behavioral Care Network, which is a mental health organization providing Oregon health plan
Could
services.
Could you please move that speaker away from you?
Thank you. When
there.
I listen to it on TV, I'm try to get it right. And I, as a mental health organization director, I work with the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs on their legislative committee. And I know that members of this committee have spoken directly with AOCMHP staff. Gina Furman, who was triple booked this morning, asked me to come by and so that you have on the record that AOCMHP is in support of these bills. I'm very happy to be joined by my frequent co-worker, Chris Anderson.
Hey. Great. Thank you so much, Dr.
Can I have a tickle? I apologize.
Can we get some water?
Can
we get some water?
Okay. Thank you. Madam Chair of the committee, thank you for having me here. And I think I better wait a minute. I That's a little better. Okay, I'm Chris Anderson. I live in West Salem, and I'm actually the Mid-Valley Regional Director for the Oregon Family Support Network, as well as the President for the National Alliance on Mental Illness for Marion Polk County. And I've come into those roles because I'm also the parent of a child with bipolar disorder with severe, strong psychotic features. And I'm speaking, well, I want to support 2406 after hearing everything I just did, but I'm here specifically for 2407. That's the one that will directly impact my family as well as families like mine. And I do have health insurance. It covers certain things, not everything. The co-pays that I have for my son's, just his regular therapy, regular doctor's appointment, regular medications, when I figured that out with what we're using right now, we're really close to that 5% cap that the bill specifies. The problem is he's not going to therapy as often as he should because I can't afford the co-pays. He really should be going at least twice a week, if minimum once a week, and right now he's going every other week because I can't handle more. When he goes into crisis, if we need to go to the emergency room, if he has to go to the hospital, those are extra burdens that happen, and for our family that has been a more than annual event. So just thinking of those things. So directly my family, this would help. Definitely in support of this bill. I do want to raise, especially since no one else has been here to speak from the mental health community, what there's been a lot of concern from other family members that I've heard about this bill, not the problem with the bill itself. As I'm sure most of you are aware, the mental health is the leading cause category of disability in the nation. So there's a lot of families that would be affected by this and children affected by it. Is there afraid that maybe it'll seem that this is the solution and that's great, and so now these families are helped and we don't have to worry about other things? So I just wanted to raise that concern that a lot of families with mental health issues, if there's better prevention and early intervention, our kids wouldn't become disabled to begin with. And they're really concerned that by focusing on what this bill will do, and some of our kids will still be disabled no matter how much intervention, and frankly, my son's severe enough, he'd probably be one of them. But I think they were just afraid that the focus would be so much on here's a solution for families, when for mental health in particular, if there's early intervention, early prevention, a lot of our kids won't have to become disabled to begin with. And a lot of those kids do qualify. I've been to Social Security, and they've said, your son would qualify, there's no doubt, but you can't get it. And again, my son's severe enough, that probably would be true no matter what, but there's a lot of families that wouldn't be true for if things weren't allowed to get so bad. So I was pretty much charged with expressing that. Well, we all definitely support this bill, and it will help a lot of families, that to just be aware that this isn't the final answer. Right. And thank you very much for your time.
And thank you for your testimony. And we know that, but yes, it's one important step to take. We hope to take more steps.
Great.
Thank you so much. Any brief questions of the speakers? Okay, thank you so much, and thank you for being brief. I think that's all the public testimony that we are having today. And I think we have a dash. Oh, I need to close the public hearing section. So I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2406 and 2407, and I open a work session on 2406. So, yes, Representative Gallagher.
I would like to move consideration of the dash one amendment. I'd like to explain what the Dash 1 amendments are.
Please do.
All right. The Dash 1 amendment for 2406 changes the word by for January 1st, 2008, with beginning in January 1st, 2008, to indicate that we know that there will not be 125 kids ready to go on the very first day of the program, that there will be an incremental move. And also it gives stronger words in line 22. Rather than authorizing the department to enroll 25 more kids each year, it says that they will. They shall.
Great. Thank you. And these amendments are available on the tables over here if anyone wants to see them. But it pretty much is two lines, as Representative Gelser said. So Representative Calvin is going to make the motion, I believe.
Come on.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2406 with the dash one amendments.
Do we need to move the dash one amendments first? Okay, could you move the dash one amendments to the bill first?
I thought I did. I'm sorry.
You did?
I moved 2406 to be amendment. I just missed a word. Amended with the dash one amendment. Sorry about that.
Representative Cowan moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2406, right? That's what we're on. Is there any questions, any concerns? Can we just do an aye vote on that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No? All right. Now, Representative Cowan is going to make the motion to move it, right?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to all of you who came today. I truly appreciate the time and the energy and the commitment that it took to get here just to talk to us, and we appreciate that very much. I would be honored to move 2106, House Bill 2106, to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass, as amended, with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you.
Under 406. I'm not doing well here.
You are doing just fine. Representative Howland moved House Bill 2406 as amended. Now, it has to go to Ways and Means, right?
Mm-hmm.
To the Ways and Means, yes. Committee. With the dash one amendment, right? With the due pass recommendation. Okay.
As amended.
So, any discussion? Representative Allen.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
If I can just take a couple minutes. I think that 2406 and 2407 need to be looked in the larger context of health care reform. And just so this is on the record, that we've got two problems in our health care. We've got a health care financing system that drives health care delivery. And so our delivery system is a function of how we pay for it. And we, one of the big questions in health care is you've got how to pay for it, and then we build these systems and how to deliver it. It is apparent to me that the folks out here know how to deliver the health care. So that really is not the issue at all. The issue is about how we pay for it. And so anything that we do today needs to be moving toward the health care reform and not be contradictory to where we need to go. And that we need, there's several things. You have to spend, you can spend smart and you can spend stupid. And you can spend right and you can spend wrong. And hopefully you're spending right and you're spending smart. And it appears that 2406 and 2407 move us in that direction. And so that's why I support it wholeheartedly. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. All right. So the Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very quickly, if I could just add an extra comment to that. The conversation about spending smart, I think that the thing we need to take away from here today, beyond the certain critical needs that are out there, is that this is smart. If we can put some money up front and save the cost, not to mention the psychological anxiety of nursing home care in the long run, it is smart spending, and that's why I support it.
Right. Pay more at the front end and less at the back end. Thank you. Now we are going to take the vote. If the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative
Cowan?
Aye.
Representative
Gilster?
Aye.
Aye.
Excuse.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion, let's see. The motion carries.
Repeated for the
The House Bill 2406 will be going to the Committee on Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation.
And as amended.
As amended, thank you. And we will close the work session on 2406. Isn't this a pain? Okay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2407. And I believe we have amendments.
Yes, I would direct your attention at your spots, the dash two amendments for House Bill 2407. These are a result of the department's tremendous efforts to respond to this very rapid work session early in the legislative session. It has four words that are most especially important on the back, which is subject to available funds. And this allows that subject to available funds for administration that above 300% of the federal poverty level, families can pay the full cost of the premium to participate. It does not require this, but these words make it so that it does not require that happen above that level. It also clarifies that the effective date of 2407 will be on January 1st of 2009. That allows time for the federal government to release their rules. And by passing this legislation, we will give the federal government incentive to write the rules.
All right. Any question about that or concern? Okay. Representative Cowan, would you like to make a motion?
Thank you,
Madam Chair. I move House Bill 2407 be amended with -2 amendments.
Perfect. Representative Cowan moves the -2 amendments to House Bill 2407. Any discussion? Mm-hmm. Yes, Representative Gelser.
I just wanted, before we voted, to thank you all again for coming today. I know especially with children with a lot of medical needs, getting to Salem from far away at 8:30 in the morning is not an easy thing to do. And for those of you that came to support your friends and friends that you don't know, but you know them in the heart because you share an experience with them, thank you for doing that and making a difference for families like yours across the state. And thank you, Madam Chair, for the time to have this hearing. I greatly appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. So we have the -2 amendments. So now, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. There's a motion on the floor.
There's a motion on the for the amendments.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So we'll do a voice vote on amendments. Any discussion about that? All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nobody is opposed. So now we're going to Representative Cowan must make this motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I'm honored. I move House Bill 2407 to the Ways and Means Committee as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cowan moves House Bill 2407 to the Committee on Ways and Means. The bill has as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All right, clerk will take the roll, please.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Excused.
Representative Gower?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries, and Representative Gelser will carry. Did I mention that before? Oh, no, it's not going to the floor.
It's going to Ways and
Means. So you will be, I'm sure, meeting with the Ways and Means Committee.
I will be.
So this bill will go to the Committee on Ways and Means, and I'm closing the work. What?
Yep.
I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2407. But I'm not closing the meeting. We have about one more minute. I want to thank you. I'm echoing what other people have said. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for all of you families who are taking care of your children. Thank you on the bottom of our hearts. We are so appreciative. And I want to thank especially Representative Gelser, who has put in days and weeks and months of work in this bill. And I can't begin to tell you how difficult that is. And being a freshman, she's only been in this body for 3 weeks, and she has just done an incredible job. So I think this is unprecedented. So we're going to have a round of applause for her. Also, for all of you, thank you. So, any other business from this committee? Oh, food is in room 50, and all of you and us are welcome. Thank you so much, and at that, I will close the Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness.